Welcome to the Game Dev Podcast. And I am your host today, Lorraine Ansell, and you can refer to me as she, her. And today I'm very excited because I'm talking to two wonderful people, Elaine Gomez and Yesenia Cineros, about game dev and the Latinx community. So hello, welcome, both of you. Who would like to introduce themselves first?
Hi, thanks Lorraine for having us here. It's an honor to just always support our fellow community members in whatever they do. So appreciate you having us here. My name's Elaine Gomez, my pronouns are she, her, and I'm a game designer at a fairly new studio called Brassline Entertainment based out of New York City. And then I am one of the co-founders of Latinx in Gaming, which is a nonprofit org. We started as an IGDA chapter for Latin American game devs, but we decided to become a nonprofit. That way we can help build community a lot better with a lot more resources, and just become a hub for folks who are of our heritage, both in the United States and abroad.
Excellent.
My name is Yesenia Cisneros, and I am a producer over at Brassline Entertainment. My pronouns are she and her. So Elaine and I both work together, and I met Elaine through Latinx in Gaming. I'm one of the moderators there and also doing some extra things. TBD on like what my title is going to be eventually. But no, I came across them back in October of last year, and it's been amazing. I love what we've been doing, how the team has been growing, and I have been able to find my people over the past almost year. So it's been great.
Yay, that's brilliant. Oh, I love it. I think it's fantastic. So how did it start? Elaine, you know, what inspired you to start this community?
So it was all Christina Maya's effort. So she's our president. So Christina, back in 2016-2017, she started just reaching out to people that she thought really wanted to make a difference and an impact in the community. So she messaged a few of our other co-founders, and then I ended up being one of those people that she reached out to, and we met at the Game Developers Conference, talked a little bit about what we could do and possibly how I could help, and how other folks could help. And then we had the very first like Latinx roundtable at the Game Developers Conference. And it kind of grew from there because we were able to network and meet with other Latin American game industry professionals and figure out what they wanted. So we have always been really conscious about being community led and community focused. So we always are asking folks like, what is it that you need? How can we help? And that's how we tailor all of our initiatives, and everything that we do is literally based on people's needs. So apparently we weren't the only ones who wanted to have like a group or a place to belong. And we saw a need for it. So since no other groups had been formed before, or if they had been formed, they were kind of like defunct, they weren't like active, we just decided to just step up to the plate and do the work that we needed to do to get it there. And that's kind of how it started.
Wow, that's quite a journey, because that was back in, what, 2017-ish,
I would say.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. That's fantastic. So it's been a few years.
Yeah. And what would you say are the needs of the community that you kind of want to help out with?
So this is something that we're still trying to get a handle of because it's complex, but one of the biggest needs that we saw is that Latin American devs want help with like visas and getting jobs, whether it be in the United States or outside of their countries. Varying factors for that. Sometimes, you know, there's just no games industry in their country. Sometimes there is a games industry, but it's so small that they cannot get the financial resources that they need, or just help in general to make their projects come true, or to even stream, or to do like game reviews and things like that. So that was like one of the biggest things that we're still trying to work with, right? Because when it comes to game dev studios, like there's so many things that are out of your control, right? Like we can't get anybody hired. We can just point them in the right direction. And if that studio has the means to get a visa, or if they have a means to sponsor somebody, then that is that studio's policy, right? We have no say. So it's kind of really hard to like tread those waters. But another thing was just financial help in general to like help with people make games or help folks get things that they need, like software and hardware. So this year we were able to get sponsors to donate money so that we could do the grant initiative that we started a couple of months ago. So we had a bunch of community members from all over apply and literally tell us what they needed, whether it be a graphics card, whether it be a software license and things like that. And we were able to start meeting some of those needs. And it's not easy as well, right? Because then you have to think about, okay, what its international things look like and the taxes and the terms and conditions that have to go with that. Like, not saying that our community members are bad, but like, what if somebody buys something and then they end up selling it and that money ends up being a negative thing? Like, you never know, right? Like, things happen. Yeah. So it's kind of scary to think about the repercussions of what you started off as a positive that could potentially become a negative or hurt somebody else. So there's a lot of things in place, and we're really lucky that in our board of directors, we have a lawyer who like knows exactly what we need to have in an agreement so that we not only protect ourselves and our org, but also protect those folks who are receiving money or receiving aid in any way. And I think that if it weren't for that help that we get, I don't think we would have been able to do like this type of initiative as quickly as we did, right? Because we only became a nonprofit last year. So it's really been a short amount of time. Yeah. But with that comes a lot of responsibility that is not just, you know, when you're an IGDA group, you're kind of left to your own devices and you can make meetings, you can make events whenever you want. And then if anything that you do requires like money in any way, it's like usually out of pocket or it's given to you, right? But when now you have like corporate sponsors as a nonprofit, like you're liable to them for like large amounts of money, because it's not just $5 or $10, we're talking about hundreds or thousands of dollars. And we want to make sure that we administer that responsibly and that we're doing the best that we can to make sure that money is impacting people's lives. Mm-hmm. And it's not just an extra thing just because somebody wants something new. You know, we really want to meet people's needs and level them up so that they can get to wherever they want to go.
Yeah. And how has it been during these past 2 years now, almost, isn't it really? Have you, like, you would have met before at conferences and events, and what have you done lately now? I don't know if at the time of the recording you can actually meet up, or is that still something that isn't happening?
Oh no, I think because of COVID, like, we're like, let's protect ourselves as best as we can. But we were lucky though, because all the events that we had planned were digital anyway. So even though COVID slammed us and the pandemic slammed us, we were still able to succeed because our plans were still to be online. Because our community members are everywhere. They're all over the states and all over the Latin America. So it's like, they cannot meet up anyway in one designated spot, you know, and spend who knows how much on flights and hotels. Like, it happens at GDC, and that's why there's a severe lack of Latin Americans who, they do go. I'm not going to say that Latinx folks do not go to game dev conferences, because they do. But the numbers are so small because the financial barrier is pretty high. But Jasenia can talk about some of those events because she attended them.
Yeah, I loved all those events. So as I mentioned, I found the Latinx and gaming community back in September, August actually of last year. And it was essentially me putting out to the universe on Twitter of like, hey, I want to start going to more conferences. I want to, that helps my community. I want to give back. I want to do panels and discussions. And like, how do I get more involved with these kind of marginalized communities? And then I think Juan was the one who at me on Twitter, he's like, hey, actually we have Unidos coming up in October. And It was so quick because it was like literally, I think it was like the end of August, and by the beginning of September, I had to submit my talk of what it was in order to, so it was a lot, it was a short amount of time, but oh my gosh, it was so fulfilling. And I love that we did the Unidos because I got to, first off, it was totally virtual event, which I feel like moving to this more remote environment allows for more people to come and gather and get, give them the resources that they didn't have before, because going to physical events such as GDC, it requires, as Elaine mentioned, it requires a lot of money. You have to get, first of all, the passes are so expensive. Second, you have to find lodging and food. And it's like, oh, and once you make it virtual, now you can bring in even a more diverse group of people and give them the access and resources they didn't have before. And so that's what I really liked with the Unidos, because I was able to kind of see everyone's perspective on whether it was webinars or cooking, because I think Elaine showed us how to cook some, I think tamales, I don't remember what it was, but
oh
it was,
my God,
amazing. I made empanadas.
Oh, empanadas. I was like, I couldn't remember what it was.
Ay, qué rico. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So it was really cool. And I got to do like my first webinar of like how to do game production, which was so exciting because I feel like being a part of that, I've already been established in my career for a number of years because I've been doing this for like 11 now. But I feel like given that opportunity has helped accelerated me a lot faster in my career, where I opened to more opportunities that I don't think I would have had unless I found this wonderful, amazing group. So we've done Unidos, and then we've also did recently like the Conexión. That was amazing to do as well too. Like it was just a few months ago, and it was all virtual. We worked with sponsorships and we did a whole virtual career fair. We had career fairs and then resume reviews, and it was a bunch of coordinating with like large companies, HR people, and just doing almost the best way I could describe it. It's almost like speed dating, but for careers. That's what it felt like Conexión was. And people were able to also pitch their game ideas and request funding where they wouldn't have access to that probably as easily in their home country or whatever the case may be. And so that was really successful. And we got to see a lot of amazing games. That's another thing that Unidos and Conexión has been nice for me. It's that I got to look at more games that I never would see before. And that is special to not only my culture, but like seeing everyone else's culture and how we all tie and integrate it together. So these events have been awesome. I like them. And I like that we continue to grow and get more creative with our ideas.
I'm really excited about the games that you saw then. What kind of trends were coming out? What popped up for you?
Oh man, there was one, I'm so bad because I do not remember the names because I was also modding that whole weekend. So I was like moderating Twitch and the Discord. So it was like, everything is kind of just flashes and blurs. But one of them was like this, I think there was one from Peru. I think, Elaine, if you can help me remember, it was one with the bird where you had the bird, like the player was a guy, and then you had like an eagle or a falcon or a hawk. I can't remember what it was. And it like flew around.
Oh, that was from Unidos. Okay. Yeah. So that was a game jam actually that we had done. So we gave our community members, whoever wanted to join the game jam, about 3 weeks to make a game. And then at the end of it, we selected some winners that got a little bit of money just for participating and for having like best of, so like whether it be story or visuals, etc. So the one that you're talking about, I think, was from Guatemala.
Yes.
And you could turn into a bird, and you were literally surveying. They used the height maps of Guatemala, if I'm not mistaken, so that it was actual terrain from the country. And they put in like special like historical structures and things. So you would fly around and land on the historical structure, and you could learn about why it was special and the history behind it all. So it was kind of like having a tour of Guatemala, like in a game, and it was really, really nice. So I like that one too. That was a big one. There are so many, and it was a while ago, so I don't quite remember all of
them. I know, everything is just like flashes to me.
Yeah, but it was a lot of cool stuff came out of that. And then most recently also, Desenia mentioned in Conexión, our career fair, we had like a funding panel, and six games from there were presented And everybody got a little bit of money, but two people got a good chunk to continue development. And one of them was from, I think it was from Guatemala. And she was a solo developer. Like, she was making the art, she was making the story, the coding, everything. And the whole story, I really liked it because she was talking about like healthcare work in her country, and her husband's a doctor. So it's kind of like almost like playing a game in the shoes of her husband, going to the clinic, going to the hospital, and figuring out how to navigate a bunch of challenges that you wouldn't think doctors would face in her country, and bringing that home and having to, you know, like keep your relationship with the person that you're living with, and making sure that you're eating properly and having energy to go back to work and make proper decisions. So it was cool because in the game, the way that you live your life in the game affects what you can and cannot do at your job. So like, for example, if you're groggy and you didn't sleep well, you go into work and there are certain things that you cannot do that will in turn affect how much money you can bring home. So it's like a very like mixed gameplay. There's like elements of like a little bit of Papers, Please. There's a little bit of elements of like narrative dialogue games. And it was just so great to see how she conceptualized this all by herself, because she's working on it alone. So that was a game that I definitely remember, just because it was different than anything I had seen before.
That's a massive scope of a game as well. There's a lot packed into that already. I'm like, wow. But I'm really curious. That would be really fun to play, actually. And what you mentioned, funding, actually, and that's something that game devs continually, we all talk about, because that is sometimes the finance and the funding of a game is the hardest thing to do. What advice do you give your members of your community that could be interesting for other people?
Well, Desenia, do you have anything that you want to say first? I can just say on my side. Okay.
Yeah, go
so
for it.
On my side, so I'm a game dev, I'm a game designer, so I know what that's like just for my personal projects to try to get some money. But what I tell folks that are looking for that stuff is that you have to do your research, because there are a lot of companies, there are a lot of studios and individuals, and you don't have to go to a publisher, a big publisher. You don't have to go to like venture capital and type of investment that may be a little bit more high risk or more like rigorous. You don't have to go that route if you don't want to. There are options. For example, I tell people to always look at social media, especially Twitter, because the industry is so live on Twitter. And through there, I personally have found several, like, there are companies that dedicate their work to publishing indie developers and to helping them get their game out there, whether it be with marketing advice, things like that. So off the top of my head, I know Glitch does that. And it's led by Ava Carr. And there are two funds that they have for marginalized developers all over the world. You have the Galaxy Fund, you have the Moonrise Fund. And we're not talking about just a few hundred dollars. Like, some of these things are like hundreds of thousands of dollars that you could apply for. So it really depends on whether you do your research and find these people, like dig in through the internet. I think it was gamesindustry.biz that did a whole like awards for publishing. And in there, they had a category for indie publishing. And it was like a list of folks who just publish indie projects and give money away through grants or things like that. So I always tell people, just do your research, just find what's best for you. If it's through Fig, if it's just itch.io and self-publishing your stuff and put a dollar amount on it, if it's on Steam, there are pros and cons to all those things. And of course, there's always like the traditional route, which is put a big pitch deck together, have a budget, a timeline, and then pitch to a big company, right? But that's the traditional route, and we don't have to do that anymore. Like, we're not bound by that, right? So there are varying options. So it depends on, as a developer, what you need, what are your needs, and how your ideas and vision and your needs align with whoever you're pitching your stuff to, right? Because all of those places have their own requirements. They have projects, perhaps a portfolio of projects that they like more than other kinds of games. So for example, personally, right, like if it were me pitching something, I know what like Devolver Digital, I know what their game portfolio looks like versus Annapurna. So I would make sure that my project fits those portfolios because it'll attract the people that have to sign off on who gets a meeting and who doesn't, right? But there's a lot of help on the internet, and we are very lucky that we live in an age where we can do that versus like maybe 30 years ago, yeah, where developers didn't have that opportunity. And especially us, right, marginalized folks, there's so many resources for us because there are people out there who are invested in our growth and are invested in us using our creativity and our voice to tell the stories that we want and to succeed, right? So even more for us, there's a lot of resources out there specifically to help marginalized developers.
You've come up with some really excellent names, really, and good places where people can really go. I mean, it's true, you're right, it is there. So thank you, that's a really good summary of all of that. Stepping away from that sort of thing and moving on to yourselves as individual game dev, what inspires you both in terms of, you know, for game dev or pretty much anything that you do? What are your key inspirations?
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to go real cheesy, but my inspiration is essentially that I want to work on something that matters. I'm at this point in my career. I've been doing this for 11 years now. And since I started in the industry, I've always had this kind of vision board in the back of my mind of like, what do I want to do? Because originally I was going to be a doctor, and I wanted to do that because one, that's a thing to do when you're Latina, it's like doctor, lawyer, like which one, you know, maybe a nurse. But also for me, I wanted to help people, and that's like super important to me. But then I've always been a gamer, and I got into the industry and I was like, oh, okay, I want to just continue helping people. And that's how I fell into production, where I was like, oh, I can still do this. And so my inspiration is like, okay, how do I love games, I want to continue doing this, but I want to also work on something that matters and kind of change how the industry works. And it took me 11 years, but I finally got into it, which is Brass Lion Entertainment, where it's a studio founded by BIPOC people, like, and we're making a difference because it's like our studio's focused on creating stories and games that are on marginalized communities, Black and Brown people and other marginalized communities. So it's like queer, whatever, everything. And I'm just like, that's what drew me to this company the most. It's like, oh my God, I finally get to work on something that matters a lot, and I want to make a difference, and I want to continue giving back to the community and help other people that look like me and also grew up in New York, or, you know, who don't have the resources. Like, how do I go find them and bring them in? Because there's like so many of us, because we find this loop of like, oh, I don't know this exists, or I can't get the experience because I need more experience, and you're just like stuck there. And so that's kind of what inspires me. It's like, how do I continue paving the way for other people behind me? And how do I keep teaching them what I've learned along the way and just like kind of open the door wide open for them, you know, as the people before me did.
And Jacinta very humbly says that because she just got promoted to lead producer at the company. So
hey,
congratulations.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great news. Well done.
Yeah. So let's see, for me, so when I went to college, I was a similar like career path, or at least thoughts, as Jacinta. So my parents really wanted me to pursue medicine. However, I quickly came to realize in college that that's not what I wanted to do. And that's mainly because I was struggling with the curriculum. So I had not declared my major yet because I didn't get into the school that I wanted within the university, which was the School of Engineering. But I was getting all the recs ready to apply to the school and transfer, right? So as I was doing those prereqs, I was just like failing and failing the courses. And I knew that it wasn't because I was not intelligent, because I graduated top of my class, and I knew that I was smart and that I was capable, but there was something about the material that just was not sticking. And to me, what I ended up finding out was just that I lacked passion, and I didn't see myself doing that for the rest of my life. And I think that affected me when I was in class and doing my work, because I was like, I genuinely don't want to do this, and therefore things are not going to stick. So I had to have really heart-to-heart, difficult conversation with my parents. Like, I do not want to pursue engineering anymore. I don't want to pursue pre-med anymore. Is it okay if I switch my major? And at first it was kind of like a big blow, because they're like, what are you going to do? Like, what career can you possibly have that is going to be stable? And it's like more worried about like, are you going to have what you need? And I understood that it was out of love and not just like, oh, Lane, like you're making bad decisions in your life, right? So I decided to switch to information technology. Both of my parents were in that world already. They were in tech. So they didn't want that for me, because they just saw the behind the scenes of that all. But I ended up doing really well, right? And during that curriculum, I got exposed to this research institute that I got into for a summer. And I didn't know that game dev was a viable career option until I went into that institute and I met somebody who was pursuing a game design degree, a master's degree, and she kind of like spilled it out all for me. She's like, this is the industry. Like, you can go into games academia. You can actually make games in studios. You can be like games adjacent and do things in tech that are still related to games. Like, you can be an IT person inside a game studio, because they still need their systems to run and all that stuff. So I was like, wow, I had no idea. Nobody ever showed me this. So I'm like really interested. And during that year, it was 2012 going on 2013. It was the same year that like Gamergate blew up. And I decided to do my research on the state of the industry in regards to gender, women in games, both in the industry as professionals, but also women characters in games, like the state of those things at that moment in time and what led up to all that stuff. So I had a lot of data analytics to go off by, like all the tweets that were coming out with Gamergate, everything that happened with Zoe Quinn, like all of that stuff fed into this big paper that I wrote with some other classmates. And it was that paper where I saw all the negative, right? You would think that that would inspire me to not get into games, right? You would think that'd be like, wow, like this industry is trash. I'm never going to play a game again. I'm not going to support anybody. But it did the opposite. It had the opposite effect on me, where I was just like, I think I can make a difference, and my time is now, and I should do it now, because the time to do it is now. It's like a hot topic. And then a lot of opportunities started to come in for women in games, especially like marginalized women in games. And I was able to get into some of those opportunities and network and stuff. So what inspired me was actually a negative. It was people saying that women couldn't be in games. It was people saying that like games like Depression Quest are not really games and things like that. And I was like, I'm going to make a difference from the inside out, and hopefully I can climb up a ladder one day where I am in a position of leadership where I can lead a game project, and that will be a big deal. And that could influence other people to want to come into the industry, because they see me in a leadership position and aspire to go through the same track or the same journey, right? And that's why, aside from that, I really believe in education. And I think it's super important to inspire the next generation. So yes, I am a part of Latinx in gaming, knowing that perhaps it's not just like middle school and high school kids who are in our community, but I get involved with orgs that do that type of work. And I, you know, give workshops. Mentor a lot of folks who are making little games. And it's not something that I don't even like to talk about it, because I hate to be like, oh, I'm doing all this great good and helping people with their lives. I don't talk about it, because to me, my biggest impact is the legacy that I can leave behind closed doors, where people are like, Elaine helped me understand what player agency means, and now I can put that in my game and in every other game that I make until I become a lead game designer at a company of my own or somewhere else, right? So to me, it's always about the impact that I can have on other people's lives, and that comes through relationships, that comes through conversations, that comes through me taking 5 minutes sometimes to answer a DM on Twitter when somebody's like, I really want to be a game designer. I had no idea where to start. I don't have a college degree. I'm scared of programming. What do I do? And just taking those 5 minutes to be like, hey, here is a YouTube channel, like go learn from it. Like there's so much free information. You don't have to go to college, but college is helpful. And being like, hey, plug yourself into Latinx and gaming, plug yourself into a pack and play. There's so many orgs that are doing such good work that can really help people that literally don't have anything, right? Or don't have the means to do anything. And to me, that's what keeps me going. It's like, I do my work and I love my work, but also is passing the baton of that knowledge that I was very privileged in getting at university or at my master's and giving that for free to kids who don't have access to it and may never have the access to it, right? So those are all important things to me, at least, and things that influence me. And of course, people like, Tanya DePass, who has I Need Diverse Games, like people who are doing that type of work where they're continuously fighting the good fight, and people like Tanya Short as well, people who have been involved in like the Limit Break mentorship program, the lunch, game dev lunch, whatever that's going on that I've seen in the UK, that one's in the UK, I hope there's like a US one too. But people that have invested time, like Code Coven, Game Heads, and people who created those orgs, like they inspire me every day. And I hope that I can just continue to just help them and elevate them in whatever way I can.
Wow, thank you.
Elaine said that like way more eloquently than I did.
But both of you are really inspiring. I'm just like, oh my goodness, yes, absolutely. And what you said, the time is now, it's so very true, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it's now all we have is now, so let's move, let's do something. And you know, when you talk about mentoring others into the industry, what advice would you give people who are young to the industry? And I mean that in terms of both age and both experience.
Desenia, do you want to take that one first?
Yeah, like advice to new people trying to get into the industry, I would say, I know this is really hard, but don't be afraid to talk to people. Like reach out, like Elaine is saying, she gets messages on Twitter, like, I don't know how to get into the industry. I want to learn more. That's like my biggest advice is like, don't be afraid to ask questions, no matter how dumb in your mind, because that's our own reality, even though it's not dumb. A question, maybe I still struggle with that, even as old as I am, you know. I think that's my biggest thing, because I feel like the more people you talk to and the more you ask questions, the more you learn about what you want to do and what you don't want to do. And who knows, that person might end up giving you the connection you need to get your foot in the door for your next job. And another thing is also be humble. Our industry is so small and large at the same time. It's one of those things that who you are as a person carries a lot, I think, within our industry. And being a genuine, really nice person takes you a long way also. I don't know. So that's always my advice, is like, because my DMs are always open, and I'm the same way. Like I've mentored a countless amount of people already in the past year, and I've helped a lot of them get jobs in the industry, which has been awesome. And that's like very meaningful for me, where it's like, I know I helped them get through the door and help them get there. And it's like so rewarding to me. And it all started with a DM on Twitter, where it's like, hey, I'm interested in blah. I saw that you're a producer. I saw your talk here. And it's like, I want to know more. Just reach out to people. Don't be afraid to talk.
Definitely. And something that you both mentioned earlier was passion. Elaine, when you were describing like your whole university experience, this is something that, you know, I also say to people, like, bring out your passion. Once you have your passion, you gravitate towards other people with shared passion, or with other people who just are enjoying watching you like discover and share what you love to do. And that is something that really does connect people a lot. And something else that we can talk about is networking. Like, how do you guys encourage networking, maybe especially now during these COVID times?
Twitter is popping.
Yeah, definitely. I would say definitely Twitter. And for every person that always comes to me and says, oh, how do I get plugged into the industry? Like, how do I know information? Or it's just like, make a Twitter account if you don't have one. And Discord as well. There's like so many Discord servers specifically for game dev, for game designers, for marginalized folks. Like Latinx Gaming has a Discord, IGDA has a Discord. There's a lot of different places where you can plug in, and even me a little bit more personal, because inside the Discord channels, you can really have like one-to-one conversations with people, and sometimes they'll have whatever events that they have sometimes on Discord, they'll like watch something together or something like that. Like in Latinx and Gaming, we had a karaoke night one night. We had, we watched the Walter Mercado documentary together. Like, there are certain little things that you can do in like a space that is small like that, and can really help people connect and build friendships, not just network to have somebody from X company in your networks that you can reach out to, right? And I always stress that to people, like, especially going to a big conference, I've seen it with my eyes that people really invest in like giving out as many business cards as they can. But to me, like, when I see that, that doesn't work, because people will forget you. Whereas if you have a meaningful conversation with somebody and you really clicked, when you give them your card, they will remember you, because they'll remember that conversation that you had. And I always tend, when I do that, I'll follow up like next day on LinkedIn, especially. I'll be like, hey, it was great. Lovely meeting you. Lovely chatting with you. I would love to keep you in my network. And that helps, you know, bridge those awkward type of conversations sometimes, where like perhaps you don't want to be that person's friend, but at least you want to have that professional connection, because you never know down the line when you may need information, when you can ask them questions, like Jesenia said. Like, you just never know, and being kind goes a long, long way. Yes, and it sucks too, because it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, because as a woman, navigating the industry and networking events is really difficult and sometimes quite scary, where you want to put yourself out there and you want to be yourself, but you at a certain extent need to be guarded, because you don't know who has bad intentions. Yep. You know what I mean? So it's also having that discernment, good judgment. It's like, if I'm getting a good vibe from somebody, I will continue the conversation. If I'm getting a bad vibe, like exit, like abort mission, right? And that's hard to do. That's something that you learn along the way as you talk to people, when you can read body language, you can see their eye contact, you can look at where they're looking at, you could see their tone of voice, right? And it's hard to do that on Messenger, like on LinkedIn. Sometimes I think that people are really rude when they're typing something and they don't mean it that way. It's just the way that they structured that sentence, right? So there can be miscommunication on all fronts, right? But networking is super, super critical. Yeah. And during the pandemic now more than ever, it's even more difficult to feel comfortable to talk to strangers completely online without having like, you don't know if you have things in common with that person. So like if you go to GDC to a, like, I don't know, Latinx and gaming party, you know that like most of everybody there is Latino, and we're going to have drinks. We're going to talk, eat good food.
We're going to dance.
Are you gonna dance?
Exactly. Yeah. Whereas in some events, you don't necessarily know, the expectations are kind of like a little unknown, because you don't know who's going to show up and you don't know what their intentions are. And you don't know if they're a troll or not, right? If they're just there to give you ruin people's time. So yeah, it's a little bit difficult now, but it's definitely something you need to keep your eyes peeled, right? And if networking is not your thing, because there's a lot of introverts in the industry, if it's not your thing, again, going to seminars and things like that, talks where, like on Twitch, where you can anonymously like talk to people on chat, right? And it's very indirect. That could be something too, that could be useful as well, because you're still engaging with people. You can still learn from people, but you may not feel like as put on the spot as if you were at like a gig gathering. I haven't even been to one of those because I freak out.
Oh my gosh, like, it freaked me out the first one.
Did you go? I haven't been. I'm still a bit shy about it.
Yeah,
I'm not
me
sure.
too. I get
I've only been
scared.
Once.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I get super scared. But and I'm not an introvert. It's just the idea of being in a room with complete strangers that I don't know, and I don't know if I have anything in common with, and it's like randomized. It just scares me. It scares me a little bit.
It's speed dating. That's what it feels like. It feels like speed dating.
Yeah. And also, very important question. Okay, what are the top karaoke songs that you were singing all together?
A lot of Selena.
Ah.
A lot of Selena's. And for me, it's a Paramore. I love all the
Paramore. You did such a good job. It was so good.
I did
Selena. I did Hamilton. I love doing Broadway tunes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Really? Oh my
God. Yeah, I remember I did Satisfied, Never Be Satisfied because it has a little bit of the rapping and it's like the tempo changes and it's fun song for me to do.
Oh, I missed a good party.
Next time, fun. Next time.
Maybe we'll have another one soon because it was really fun.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Gonna have a pre-Christmas one.
Yes, we also had Coquito Night on Christmas. That was fun.
Whoa. Okay, so for people who don't know, please explain.
Coquito is a predominant, so I'm from Puerto Rico, and like I know that it's our holiday drink, so it's our version of eggnog. So we use condensed milk, coconut milk, and other milks depending on how you want to make it, with rum and cinnamon. Yes, a lot of rum, cinnamon, and some other spices. Some people add some cloves and nutmeg and things like that. But it's really like a spiced coconut like drink, like a coconut eggnog. That's what we drink for Christmas. Mm. But some people are very liberal with their amounts of rum that they put in.
Of course.
I don't know what you're talking about.
So it's like this much.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's like rum. Oh, okay, I guess I could put the rest.
Yeah, a little better.
All I can say that it tastes very good, and you have to be very careful with how much you drink. Because you can very quickly get to that happy place.
I wish I could tell you how many times I have messed up my white American friends on this drink. Because I was like, oh, I make this drink, and I had to explain to them what Coquito is. And I'm like, it's a Puerto Rican drink, but a lot of Latin America, South America, we've like embraced it and made it more like a holiday tradition for Christmas.
Adopted.
And then adopted it. Yes. That's what I'm like, what's that word I'm looking for? Adopted it. And yeah. And so then I would bring it to holiday parties, and yeah, they quickly realized it was very strong.
Yeah.
So now I have to put disclaimers when I give it to them.
Like, be very, very careful.
Yeah. May have a lot of rum. TM does have a lot of them.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds really good fun. I really hope that, you know, there is something that you can do Christmassy wise, or who knows, New Year, something like that.
Yes.
That would be really nice.
I need to convince Elaine to cook me pasteles, but we'll see.
I definitely will. Now that I'm moving. So I'm moving from California to New Jersey, New York area for the new job, just because I was able to relocate and my lease was up. So now that I'll be on the East Coast during the holidays, I can make it and I can drop you off some.
Sweet. I'll just have to plan my trip to be here during the holidays, and then I can get some from you. I'm so excited. Yes, done.
Excellent. I love it. I might have to send like a little post box to you and be like, please, can I have some?
The Oliver Twist it. Please, can I have some?
I'm gonna have to put it in the with like dry ice so it stays nice and frozen.
Yeah, exactly. Like across the ocean it comes. Oh my goodness. And so can you talk about what you're working on at the moment, or is everything NDA, the magic words?
Definitely NDA.
Oh.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
We can
working
say
on a thing of that does a thing.
Yes, we can say though that it's an action RPG, right? It's an action RPG with anime aesthetics. So we can go that far. And
it's gonna be dope AF.
Yes, it's going to be dope. And we can also say that because diversity is such a big core pillar of our studio, you can definitely expect a lot of diversity and a lot of the a lot of Black, Brown voices being inside the game, for sure, because all the creatives are all Black, Brown folks.
Excellent. Oh, I am looking forward to that.
Actually, not all creatives, most creatives.
Most creatives.
So I think white cis folks are the minority this time around in our studio.
I know, which is so bizarre and interesting, but also it's amazing.
Yeah, but it does, like I say this all the time, it takes a village to get a game launched. Absolute, well, a massive village, more a town, maybe a city of people. So I'm always impressed by indie studios that are like one or two people, because that's a lot of work. It really is. So
yeah, we're very excited and can't wait to share more about this.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yes.
Well, at the time of recording, I don't know when this will go out, but we wish you all the best for that, because that does sound very good. And you
Thank
must
you.
Come back and tell us all about it.
Yes,
absolutely.
Would love that.
Yes, once we have more information to share, we will definitely share it with you. You'll be like the first one to know.
Yes, I like that. And then, you know, Game Dev London will be happily talk to everyone about it, basically.
Yes.
It sounds bad. So is there anything else coming up for the Latinx community that you're working on?
So part of Latinx in gaming, we will have our like the second annual Unidos celebration, which is it falls under not necessarily the full month. So Latinx Heritage Month is from September 15th to October 15th in the United States. So around October time, I believe, which is when we did it last year, we will have Unidos 2021. Mm-hmm. And definitely stay tuned for that. There's going to be lots of cool content that's going to come out. And I am sure even more cool stuff that's going to happen. And let's see if we have anything else major. We have something special coming up as well, but we haven't announced it yet. So y'all will need to stay tuned on our Twitter, because we do have a special announcement, something cool, an opportunity that we got so that we can share it out with our community. And as far as I know, that is it for now. That's what we have planned left. Hopefully, like you said, we will have a little Christmas celebration of some kind or New Year celebration. But as of now, I don't think anything has been planned. But we did have a little something in our Discord last year, so maybe we can do something similar. But so far, those are the things that are in agenda. Secret thing that's going to be announced soon, and Unidos.
Oh, excellent. Oh, it's exciting. I can't wait for you to share more. You're teasing us with these little bits of information. I love it. So is there anything else you want to bring up or highlight?
Find a mentor if you can, which goes back to my thing of don't be afraid to ask questions, reach out to someone. Find a mentor that you look up to with that you're interested in that field, and build that connection with them, because having a mentor who's been doing it for X amount of years walk you through that process is so beneficial, because they'll help you figure out what's a good studio, what's a toxic studio, what's the normal, and it gets to that point, like pay range, how to spruce up your resume. So it's finding a mentor is super important, especially when you're starting out. And even as you're in the industry, I still have mentors of my own that I'm like, okay, the next step I want to go is over here. So now I'm going to find a mentor that is a few levels above me so I can learn from them on how to grow. So you always need to find a mentor of like where you want to go next.
Absolutely. That's so important. It's it really is beneficial. So yeah, thank you for highlighting that. But yes, excellent. So thank you very much, both of you. And that concludes another episode of the Game Dev London podcast. I have been your host, Lorraine Ansell, and you can find me online on Twitter, LA Voice Art. And a big thank you to both of you. Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us. Where can people go to find out more about you individually, as well as the Latinx community?
So you can find me on Twitter. It's at Miss MS Yesenia C. I'm very active on Twitter. My DMs are open, as I mentioned earlier, so feel free to ask me questions. If anyone needs some mentorship or guidance on where they want to go into the industry or about production help, that is mostly where I'm the most active. And if you find me on LinkedIn, my biggest recommendation is to please send me a message with your request, because so often I don't encourage blind LinkedIn requests. I always prefer a message to know, like, oh, so-and-so found me from this. If not, I usually decline. So you can find me on LinkedIn as well too, at Yesenia Cisneros.
Thank you very much, Yesenia. And Elaine, what about you?
So for Latinx in Gaming, our handle on Twitter is Latinos in Gaming. And in our bio, you can also find a link to our Discord server if you want to join in. As my personal Twitter handle is at Chulatastic. It's Chula and Fantastic combined. And that's pretty much my handle for everything else. But I don't really use any other social media networks aside from Twitter. And like Desenia, you can find me on LinkedIn too. Please send a message. I will not be kind. I will actually just ignore if I don't know you or if you didn't say anything, just to protect myself, right? Because I don't know who has good intentions and who doesn't, right? So might as well just keep it clean there. Yeah. Latinx in Gaming also has a Facebook page, so you can find us there as well. But we update most often on Twitter and in our Discord. Those are our main two avenues of communication.
Fabulous. Well, thank you both. Fantastic. Thanks to everyone who's tuned in today, and be sure to check out gamedev.london for the latest updates. Otherwise, we'll see you here the same time next week. Take care. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.